Call this meeting to order, South Los County Board of Supervisors. Please rise for a salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we will start this morning with a presentation, the South Los County Leadership Presentation by Mr. David Delaner.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring, my name is David Delaner, Deputy Executive Officer in the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Today is the second Safety Leadership Recognition Presentation. As you know, these presentations are done each quarter pursuant to the County Safety Board's strategic plan. The presentation today is to recognize the Department of Behavioral Health and Recovery Services for the significant safety improvements they have made during the past several years. Several times they have reported no accidents during a month in a three-month quarter. Before I turn the presentation over to Department Head Denise Hunt, I would like to note that our records show that Behavioral Health and Recovery Services has been compliant a total of 23 consecutive quarters since April of 2003. Denise.
Good morning, Denise Hunt, Behavioral Health Director. It's my pleasure today to introduce the presentation about BHRS's safety and risk management efforts. And this presentation represents the work through several years of many people, beginning with a commitment on behalf of the mental health director several years ago, two directors before me, in fact, Dr. Larry Poster. He had the foresight to understand and teach that safety and risk management have a strong bottom line component, in addition to the fact that a safe workplace is a fundamental element of a successful organization with satisfied employees and well-served clients. BHRS has institutionalized safety and risk management activities through an investment of resources that's paid us back many times over. The one thing I wanted to be sure to mention is that if we can support our employees to personally invest in what it takes to have a safe workplace, we'll succeed in our goals. We've only been as successful in this area as our employees have made us. I'm very happy this morning to introduce Ron Gandy, who currently serves as the BHRS contracts manager and privacy officer. But for several years, in addition to several other assignments, Ron was our safety officer. He's going to talk about BHRS's safety and risk management results. Ron Gandy.
Good morning. Rather than have you look at me, I'd like to direct your attention to the screen, and we'll get started. I have titled this brief presentation, Signs of Safety. I know that during my tenure as the safety representative for our department, oftentimes a safety issue resulted in some sort of signage that we had to put up. So it occurred to me that signs are often the result and certainly an indicator of safety, and we'll have a play on that later in the presentation. So this morning we're talking about signs of safety. Let's jump right into some numbers. These are our on-the-job injuries. We refer to them as OJIs, and I'll try not to get too many acronyms today, so we'll just have this one. On-the-job injuries are referred to as OJIs. This is 9 years. This is the records that I have kept since my tenure as the safety representative for our department. And you'll notice that there are some significant changes, particularly in the later years they go down. Let's look at that and see what that comes up to. Looking at the highest year, which was 2001-2002, and the lowest year, which is the most recent year, we had a total of 76 OJIs in that year, and it's dropped to 24 this last year. That's a change in 68%. It's a 68% reduction in the number of OJIs between those 2 years. Let's look at some more impressive numbers, the cost of OJIs. You know, some real significant changes there. You'll notice that prior to 03-04, there was some significant costs. We're talking $500,000 or more, and up to $1.4 million in those years, and it's significantly better in recent years. Let's look at the highest and lowest again, just for a brief picture. The highest was $1,370,000, and the lowest was last year, or pardon me, it wasn't the lowest, but it was the most recent year, $101,000. And that's a $1.25 million savings. Those are big numbers, very, very impressive numbers. But if we go back and look at that chart again, we can see that just looking at the highest and lowest kind of gives us an idea there's a bump there of $1.4 million. That may not give us the truest picture, but let's look at what happened when we changed our safety incentive program to our current safety incentive program. We did that in mid-year of 2003-2004. So right in the middle of this chart, halfway through this chart, we changed our safety incentive program and to a more successful one. I'm going to stop right here and say that we didn't create the safety incentive program from scratch. All of our safety incentive programs we benchmarked from the CEO's office, risk management division, and the CEO's office and other departments in the county. But we tweaked all of them to suit our needs and to try and achieve the best results. So looking at the 5 years that ended in the middle of that, well, ended 03-04, looking at those 5 years five-year numbers, the average number of OJIs was 60 per year. The average cost was $728,000 a year. So even though we had a peak, it was still significant, almost $750,000 each year for those 5 years. Another thing that I haven't introduced until just now, and that is the average attendance of the safety committee meetings was 9 people attended our monthly safety committee meetings. Those are some numbers then, before the change in our safety incentive program. Now, for the 4 fiscal years that ended 08, beginning after that change year, the average number of OJIs was 39 for the last 4 years. The average cost of OJIs per year was $131,000. The average attendance at the monthly safety committee meetings was 19. You can tell that that's a 35% reduction in OJIs. It's an almost $600,000 per year reduction in the cost. And the safety committee attendance has more than doubled. Let's look at that safety committee attendance a second, and I just want to bring your attention to the middle year again. You notice the numbers, although we have a reduction there in 04-05, but the numbers were pretty much stagnant, pretty much static. The number of people that attended the safety committee meetings was either 8 or 9 on the average for all the previous years. And then they jumped with our current safety committee, our current safety program. And they jumped and they've continually steadily climbed since then. So, now that I have your attention with some numbers, I want to talk about what makes it work. Leadership support. Denise already mentioned it. Without the support of leadership, and that is not only our department, but the leadership here in the county, we would not be able to do this. In 1998, Senate Bill 883 was passed, and that allowed the counties to actually directed the counties to have safety programs, and we started one here in the county, more earnest than had ever been done before. In 1998, they also increased, the state did, the possible amount of money that you could spend per employee on a safety committee program. We have never gone into that. For 10 years now, we have kept our expenditures at the same limit that it was prior to 1998. However, we have changed our safety committee program several times, and the leadership that we have received, the support from leadership, particularly in our department, allowing us to communicate and do the things that we needed to do to make our department and the county safer, has been a tremendous help. The leadership from the County Risk Management and Safety Unit, without the support of them, particularly in my early years, when I didn't know what I was doing as a safety representative, has been just invaluable. As I said, we didn't really come up with any of our safety incentive programs by ourselves. We benchmarked them based on the CEO's safety programs. Communication has been the key. When we started, pretty much the safety representative was sending in reports and doing things, the departmental action plan or whatever it was, I would do those things without regard to any input. We have changed that completely. The entire department is involved in our departmental action plans and analyzing our previous year's OJIs and determining what we should do. Safety incentive program, folks, I can't tell you what a difference it's made. One of the biggest things we changed, and we've always had a safety incentive program since all of those numbers up there, we had a safety incentive program, but right in the middle we changed to a safety incentive program that is based on compliance rather than results. If when we based it on results, if someone was injured in the department or in the program, no one got participated in the safety incentives for that quarter. They felt like they didn't have any say over it, and certainly wanted the reports. We wanted to know if someone was injured, and we recognized that that was not the best way to get compliance. So we changed it to where it's based on compliance. You do the right things. You come to the safety committee meeting. You talk about the safety topics in your staff meetings. You do the right things, the things that we need in order to get communicate safety to you. And the compliance resulted in the results that you've seen on those charts. So changing it to compliance rather than results made a big difference. Culture of safety, I can't speak about that enough. In fact, I can't even take the time to tell you. The culture of safety changed in our department, and I think it's changed here in the county. It's been one thing that the Risk Management Division has been working on, and I know that in my department in particular, behavioral health, particularly with an inpatient unit, you recognize that there might be some injuries, and we came to accept those injuries in the past. We stopped doing that, and we started treating those situations like they really were important, like we really could control them. And it was an education with our staff to get them to realize that they did not have to expect violence, and they did not have to expect injuries. The change in culture in our department has been tremendous. So here's a couple of key lessons that I think that I would like to pass on. If anybody would like to learn anything from what we've done, the safety incentive program is key to our results, I believe, and that is maximizing the individual involvement was a really important thing. We always had a safety committee, but we didn't necessarily let them control what the safety incentive program was and have all of the say that they have now. And focus on compliance and not results. And by changing that, we changed our results. It was really important. Communication, advertising, never let up. That's actually the really steep increase, a continued increase in the attendance at the safety committee meeting is because we can continue to communicate and advertise the meetings and try and get people to be involved. We participate in county work groups. Our department has been always supportive of whatever the county is doing. We participated in the strategic planning that was talked about earlier, and this is this spot is one of the results of the strategic planning by the safety board, and we participated heavily in those things throughout all their efforts and throughout the years. The other thing is to measure the results and focus the efforts. With our departmental action plan, we measure what's going on. We track the OJIs, and we turn around and we say, what can we do to improve that particular area, whatever it is, whether it's falls, slips, automobile accidents, whatever it is, we focus our energy the next year on those kind of things. Those are the lessons that we think we've learned and that we'd like to pass on. Where do we go from here? You know, we've got tremendous results. Can we just sit back on our laurels and consider that we have achieved all we're going to achieve, that we're always going to have some OJIs? I don't think so. We keep what works and improve the rest. That's a trite little saying, but it really is important that you actually try and figure out what it is that's working right now and try and figure out what's not working and improve those things. Education, we always have staff turnover. Sometimes I hesitate to say it, but we all forget things, and we need to keep refocusing on education. Communication, never let up. People need to know that safety is important to our leadership as well as, and that makes it important to them. It should be important to all of us, but if leadership thinks it important, it's important to everybody. And never stop focusing on the fact that zero OJIs is really the goal. That's what we're all trying to achieve. It's not just about the numbers. I want to leave you with one thing. One of our lowest years, and screen in front of you, one of our lowest years, we had one injury. It was a fall, and that injury, here we are celebrating the lowest OJIs, the lowest cost that we've ever had in our department, in modern times anyway, and we have an OJI that costs us half of that. One OJI out of 40 cost us half of that. But that's not really what's important. What's really important is that that's a dramatic, life-changing event. We can have the best results, and we've had some tremendous results. But what it really matters to is these people that don't have life-altering injuries. They don't slip and fall. They don't break a hip, break a leg, forever limp or whatever, the pain and suffering. These can be life-altering events, and we want to try and avoid that and improve the quality of life for all of our staff and all of the county. Well, no OJIs would be our goal. And that's all I have. Do you have any comments or questions?
And then Supervisor O'Brien.
Very good presentation, and I'm glad you ended with that, because that's the part I was going to stress. Yeah, the numbers are great. It helps our budgets, but the other half of the equation are our employees. And if we can prevent an accident, it prevents that pain and suffering of that employee, the stress it puts on their family, the stress it puts on their coworkers who has to pick up additional work because someone's not at work. So I'm glad you ended with that, because that is the most important, the health of our employees.
Yeah, great Thank job. You. And Supervisor O'Brien's on that committee, so you've done a great job there. I'll just put you on it for another year. Okay, this was a presentation and does not require a vote. Thank you. A very good presentation. In public comment period, I have one person who's filled out a card, Deborah Harper.
Good morning. My name is Deborah Harper, and I'm in. Currently residing in Modesto, California. I just have one request. It is now the holidays of 2008, and we are ongoing with fabricated false information that is completely jamming me up in this county. And we just had a beautiful presentation about safety issues, and I have no speech this morning, but I just request that you all seriously consider stop fabricating the false information throughout this county. In specific areas. I've written documentation and letters and sent them through the offices, appropriate offices, and they are not being appropriately handled, and they are currently being denied. I just pray that this changes. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights was written in 1948. We're kind of behind the times on that one. And I just pray that every one of you have an awesome Thanksgiving. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else who would, David, do you have something you would say? Is there anyone else who would like to address this board on any item that is not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none, we will go to consent agenda calendar. Yes, you had some.
Yeah, I need to make two corrections to the consent item, consent agenda before you vote on it. The first is on item B5. The staff recommendations are accurate. Under discussion, however, and I take full responsibility for messing this one up as badly as it is, I want to note that the county offices will be closed a half day on Wednesday, December 24th, and all day on Thursday, December 25th for the Christmas holiday, and all day on Thursday, January 1st, 2009 for New Year's Day. What I am asking is that board members provide employees not otherwise required to work the opportunity to use vacation or compensatory time off. And the way I had written that discussion memo left that just a little bit vague. I would also, under the policy issue, I had put Monday, January 2nd, for no particular reason. I have no idea why I did that. It should be Friday, January 2nd. That's the only other correction. The corrections have been noted and posted to the website, and so they are correct online right now. The second is item B13. Staff recommendation 2 is authorize a project manager to issue a notice to, and that reads precede. We corrected that to read proceed, contingent upon receipt of proper insurance and bonds, and those are the only changes.
Okay. Any member of this board wish to pull an item from the consent calendar? Okay. Seeing none, I will entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Okay, motion to approve the consent calendar by Supervisor O'Brien, seconded by Supervisor Grover. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried 4-0. Okay, we will move to item A4. Approval to accept the clerk recorder's certified statement of the results of the presidential election. Lee, looks like you were up late last night.
We were up late last night. Chairman DeMartini, County Council Doring, Board of Supervisors, I'm Lee Lundergan, Stanislaus County Clerk Recorder and Registrar of Voters, and here today with my entire election staff to celebrate the fact that we have concluded the presidential election. We have concluded the year of elections in which, from November to November, we have held 6 full elections in Stanislaus County, the most ever held in this county. Each election takes approximately 6 months from beginning to end to hold. Therefore, in this period of time, you can see the amount of overlap, the amount of 12-hour days my staff has put in. I think we can all be very, very proud to have the very fortunate, dedicated, professional, exacting election staff that we have, the great poll workers that we've had for this election, the observers that came out and supported us, and the volunteers, including the grand jury, which came down, helped us, stood outside and took ballots at our little drive-through ballot tent. It was a very, very full-bodied election, and we are delighted to be able to bring it to you today. I would like to have my staff stand and be recognized. They worked very, very hard. I brought them all down here today. So if you would, please all stand. And they deserve claps every day. They worked very, very hard. This is the largest election that has ever been held in Stanislaus County history. I do have a couple figures to give you. First of all, we've had the most registered voters ever, 230,163 registered voters eligible to vote in this election. In this election, we've had over 162,941 individuals cast ballots. It's a record-breaking. 94,074 ballots came in the mail. 94,000. That is well over the 68,000 that went to the polls. So you can see the direction this is headed. People like the fact that they can vote through the mail. They've been doing it more and more, and we're going to see, I think, an upswing. Finally, I wanted to mention that this is the largest voter turnout that we've had in since I have been keeping record, 70.79% voter record turnout. I've had quite a few little informations here from the past, and the largest we've had before has always been in the 60% range. So this did break 70%, and it is a record for our county. I bring before you today the certification of the vote for your review and acceptance and declaration as a Board of Supervisors. If you have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions for Lee Lundgren? Supervisor O'Brien.
Yeah, Lee, I have a question about the recent ruling from Secretary of State Deborah Bowen about the anytime a vote comes within 0.5%, it requires a bigger hand tally.
That's correct.
And by the final canvassing, I see that 2 elections are within 0.5% of passing, Measure V and Measure S. Was there a bigger hand tally of those 2 races?
The new law of which you're speaking is actually, it was an emergency situation put in by the Secretary of State. It is not supported by the counties because it is only those races which were within 0.5% on election night. So it's only on election night. We are supposed to, had we had one, we would have had to do the 10% tally during the rest of the tally as numbers were coming in and changing that whole time. So in reality, the value of it is very little, fairly limited when you consider that there is no requirement that we tally this. There's only a requirement that we tally an election night moving number.
Okay. Even there's one election that's only two votes.
That is correct.
There, and so in that area, do you do more than 1%?
We actually took the Del Porto Community Hospital review of that election. It was two votes apart, and we actually hand counted it yesterday to ensure that it was the exact amount that the machines had registered. I am delighted to tell you that there was absolutely no movement at all. Our machines were 100% accurate, as was conducted by the hand tally that followed it, 100% hand tally, of which all these people got involved.
I think since you've become the clerk recorder, haven't we had at least one special election every year?
I'm sure there's been several. It feels like many. In fact, I do want to give the board a little advanced warning that there is consideration in Sacramento now of an additional special election being held in 2009. We have not been given any further advice or information on it, other than it could be in June or it could be in November. June is the same year that in the odd years that we hold the Summer Training Institute at Stanford, California, in which I am the chair this year, and therefore I'm hoping there's not a June election that would coincide and conflict with that.
So it wouldn't be California without a special election.
And I do have for you pins. These were given to all of our poll workers and all of our individuals who worked at the polls, so I do want to hand them out to you gentlemen, and thank you for your support.
Okay, we're not quite done with you yet, Lee. Supervisor Grover.
Yes.
Thank you for your diligent efforts here. I have a question from County Council regarding emergency regs and Secretary of State. And since I don't understand, I don't want to get in the middle of it, but I want to hear the conversation. So if I could ask County Council to ask the question.
Sure. It's my understanding that the Secretary of State has implemented emergency regulations requiring a 10% hand tally where the results are within, was it 0.5%?
0.5%.
0.5%.
On election evening.
On election evening, not right. on the official results at the end of the at the end of the day.
That is correct.
Okay.
And we have already spoken with the Secretary of State's office, and they have indicated that Stanislaus County does not fall within the realm of the new law.
Okay.
41 other races throughout the state did. We do not have one.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
What are the steps that would be appropriate to take? Should we decide for a recount, the campaign?
Which campaign are we discussing?
As you ask.
The requirements for a recount in that campaign are multi-stepped. I do have a pamphlet with that we'll be giving out to anyone who's interested in that. The requirement is 5 days from the date of certification, which was yesterday. The party who wishes to have the certification reviewed and to have a recount would have to give written requirements and formal requests to my office. That would have to be by this Wednesday at 5 p.m. because of the holiday that follows. It is straight 5 days. It is not 5 work days. It is 5 straight days. Within 7 days thereafter, a count would start. The count would have to be paid on a daily basis of what our office charges for that. And I believe it's $300 per hour for a count that is electronic, and $650 per board if it is a hand count. That would go on until completed.
Okay. Are there any other options to a recount that you know of?
I'm not sure what you're saying, what you're asking. Options.
Well, other than the campaign requesting it, is there
any? There's no automatic recount.
That would trigger a recount?
No, there is not.
Okay.
The voting machines that were used for handicapped voters or complex machines, did they work well in this last election?
My understanding is, in general, they worked quite well. We did have a number of ballots that came in that were marked that way. This election had two races in which there were certified write-in candidates. One of them was president, one of them was the 19th congressional district. And with regard to those, that means we have to hand review all of the ballots that come in with any kind of write-ins on them to see if those two races had any of the write-in individuals, which you can see by the document that was handed out. We tally them all by hand. In looking through all the documents and every single ballot, we saw many that had been marked by that machine. So it was very encouraging to know that our people throughout the county are using it, not just for the disabled, but, for example, if you had your ballot and you wanted it in Spanish and you wanted to have it read to you, it would read it to you so that you could more easily vote in English, Spanish.
Does it read it in Italian also?
We're working on that. Not quite yet.
Okay, well, they are very complex machines, and I hope you're storing them properly out of the weather.
Well, you know, we'd always like to talk about the warehouse capabilities and moving our office to a larger physical location. That is a wonderful segue into that I'm always happy to discuss anytime.
Okay. Supervisor Grover.
I'd like to ask County Council if he knows of any other things that would trigger a recount.
We're aware that one other situation that may apply, but it depends on the facts. Under Elections Code Section 15640, the Board of Supervisors may request the district attorney to petition the Superior Court for an order directing a public recount if probable cause exists to, one, based upon facts, one, misconduct that makes it likely that the election results were affected, or two, errors or failures of equipment and those kinds of matters exist that cause substantial doubt that the accuracy of the results of the election are affected. Again, those would be fact-dependent. We'd have to know more about the situation, such as Supervisor DeMartini asked if there was any confusion in the machinery that may have precluded people from voting properly. But without those facts, we couldn't determine whether or not there's sufficient probable cause to warrant a petition at this time.
Do you know of any complaints that the machines weren't working correctly?
I do not.
Okay. Anybody here? I haven't heard.
I have not.
We were actually told that this is one of the best elections we've ever held, with a high degree of accuracy. Very pleased with the poll workers. We've been given calls from numerous people through the community, and I've had board members also tell me it was a good election.
Sure. Yeah, I had virtually no complaints that we received. So I think it's a job well done. Supervisor Monteith?
Well, I want to compliment you. I know you've had experience with close elections and that you're familiar with the process, and I commend the whole group.
Thank you very much. And on behalf of my staff, I know they thank you as well.
Further questions? Hey, thank you for your report.
We got a vote, so I'm waiting.
Oh, okay. We'll entertain a motion to accept the clerk recorder's certified statement of the results of the presidential election.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, motion made by Supervisor Monteith, seconded by Supervisor Grover. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried 4-0.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lee. Okay, we will move to item B-15, approval of a revised strategy for managing the franchise refuse collection. We have a staff report, please.
Yes. Good morning, Chairman DeMartini, members of the board, CEO Robinson, and County Council Doring, Sonia Herdfeld, Director of Environmental Resources, and with me this morning is Jamie Agers, the Assistant Director, and Ron DeLong, our Solid Waste Manager. Jamie's going to be doing a presentation this morning, and this is just this this little small group that's sitting up here is just a part of the team that's been working on this agenda for quite some time. And with this, I will turn the microphone over to Jamie.
Good morning. Stanislaus County has historically used a franchise system to manage refuse collection in the unincorporated areas. The county currently has 4 franchise agreements, and of those, 1 has a fixed term, which concluded in 2007. The board has since authorized 2 one-year extensions to that agreement, the second of which is currently set to expire on November the 5th of 2009. We refer to this area as Area 3. The remaining 3 agreements are what we commonly refer to as evergreen contracts because they had originally had a fixed term of 10 years, but the contracts also include a provision that automatically adds 1 year to the term each April 1st. We refer to these areas as Areas 1, 2, and 4. The Area 3 agreement is with USA Waste, also known as Waste Management, Inc., and it expires in just shy of 1 year. This pending expiration is an opportunity to develop a more current franchise agreement and to introduce change into the franchise system. The opportunity presents several options, for Area 3. First is staff's recommendation, which is to put Area 3 out to a competitive procurement process. Number 2, to negotiate a long-term agreement with the existing franchisee, Waste Management. And third, to allow the current agreement with Waste Management to expire and divide it among the 3 remaining franchise holders. So why consider a recommendation to pursue a competitive procurement? This would allow the county the opportunity to evaluate service delivery with the possibility of lower costs and increased service to its residents, and it would result in the development of a more comprehensive franchise agreement. If the board chooses to go through a competitive procurement, the following items are what the department would need to complete the process: a new franchise agreement, a scope of work, the bid documents themselves, and the completed request for proposals package. While County Council and DER staff together would develop the new franchise agreement, specialized outside expertise is needed to ensure that the RFP documents are of the highest possible quality. Staff's recommendation is to accept a proposal from Hilton, Farncoff, and Hobson for the needed assistance in the amount of $33,415. In addition, staff recommends a 15% contingency of $5,012. This would bring the not-to-exceed total to $38,427. This would be this would be on a time and materials basis, so if the consultant time was not used, no expense would be incurred. In summary, staff recommends that it be directed to develop a request for proposals, putting Area 3 out to a competitive procurement process, and that it be authorized to enter into a contract with Hilton, Farncoff, and Hobson for assistance with the procurement documents. That concludes our presentation, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions of staff? Supervisor O'Brien.
One question, and it kind of bridges from our last discussion we had not too long ago about new methodology. As we go out to bid, and I fully support going out to bid, and we get a rate from a hauler, are we going to use this new methodology to go back and refigure out those rates on that bid? And let me give you an example, a couple examples, one where I think it would be appropriate and one where I wouldn't think it would be appropriate. Of course, as fuel. Fuel's the big thing that no one can predict what's going to happen to it. As fuel goes up or down, obviously the rates need to adjust up and down. But if a hauler were to become efficient and maybe invest in new equipment that brings their cost down or does something with workers' comp, we heard a safety presentation this morning, does something to become efficient there, is that hauler penalized?
Is the hauler penalized for making those
investments? If they do something to become efficient, does the hauler get penalized with lower rates?
Not to my knowledge. I know in the case of workman's compensation, under the current methodology, we use their actual costs in developing the methodology. As we move forward under the new rate adjustment process, you know, all of those identified categories are going to be indexed based on their respective indexing category. So, you know, whether it's the salaries and benefits or the all other index for the Western region. But when it comes to the actual bid process, I mean, my understanding is that the bids come in, there will be a team that will evaluate each of those proposals, and in the development of all of the bid documents, we will also develop a criteria by which each of these bids are based on. And so when that bid for that service comes in, that criteria will be applied to those proposals, and then as a result of that, those proposals will be, you know, will be ranked, and then a recommendation will come out of that.
Okay, let me ask in a different way. It goes out the bid and we award it to a company.
Right.
And all of a sudden, their inefficiencies, poor management, something happens and the cost goes up. Are we going to turn around and raise that cost to our ratepayers because they became inefficient?
No.
Okay. So the bid is going to be the bid except for costs that are uncontrollable, like fuel, like tipping charges.
Right. I would, and we haven't ironed all of those little details out, but those things that are pass-through costs, what we refer to as pass-through costs, which would be the tip fee at the waste energy plant.
Stuff that a hauler can't control.
Stuff that the hauler can't control. Those adjustments will be made in that bid for those costs should they go up during that set period of time that the bid submitted. But the
cost that they can control, they have to live by their bid.
That's correct.
Beautiful. That's what I was hoping to hear.
Okay.
And Supervisor Grover.
I think it was answered, but just clarification of Supervisor O'Brien's concern. Your concern is that if a person or if the organization is on a successful bid and they come up with ways to enhance their bottom line, they have a right to keep it under this new scenario. And if they lose control of their expenses, they have to absorb it.
That's right.
Okay.
Which every bid we do, if we do a bid for construction in the county, same thing. If that construction company does a great job, they make more. If they do a lousy job, they make less.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Further questions of staff? Okay, I just had one. We hire consultants for everything, it seems like. Is this $33,000 for this consultant really necessary? Is it something that cannot be done in-house?
Yes. I believe it's essential for us to put together a bid package that companies will be willing to bid on. Myself, several members of the CEO's office and county council have spent many hours over the last several months trying to identify all of those things that we feel should go into a prospective bid package, and we are not comfortable with our level of expertise because we have not been through this before. And so we're requesting to hire someone from the outside who has this level of expertise to help us through the final steps of this process.
Hey, Supervisor Monteith?
I agree with your comment. This is the first time we've gone out to bid. We've used a different methodology before, or process, whichever term you wish to use. And I want to make sure that it's fair for all concerned and what's best for the county, and I think this prevents us from getting in sidetracked on some issues. This way we're going, I think we should know what we're doing and ask for guidance and make sure that's done properly. Thank you.
Are there further questions for staff? Anything on comments from the public? Please state your name and the city that you're from, please.
Chairman, Steve Harum, I represent Waste Management. Thank you for this opportunity to comment on this today. I just have a few general comments I'd like to make. First of all is to express to you that my client Waste Management is generally in agreement with the general goals which you are trying to accomplish. This is not an instance where someone is coming before you and is nose-to-nose with you or disagreeable. Instead, we agree with the objectives you are attempting to attain. We think those are laudable and those are goals you should attempt to attain. However, we believe that they could be achieved in an alternate means, and that is largely what we want to discuss with you. As we understand it, and I think the PowerPoint presentation on the reasons for doing it really clarified and illustrated the point, is that what you want is a modern contract that will have the flow control, it'll have service performance standards and enforcement, and it will have a term certain since three of your contracts currently are evergreen. My point to you that as with respect to Area 3 for which Waste Management is responsible, that contract currently has flow control, currently has service performance standards and enforcement, and obviously has a term. And I would point out to you that indeed for the last couple of years my client has attempted to enter into negotiations with the county in order to create a new contract. They are involved with approximately 43 contracts in Northern California and Reno. They're familiar with the concept of a modern contract and are prepared to offer a template that was adopted in another county under similar circumstances for those services. As to the issue of rates, which is the other thing that is a concern to the board, are you getting the best rates for the public, which is obviously an extremely valid point. I would start by pointing out that you currently have a methodology which you're going to put into this bid that drives what the rates are. So I think we can take a historical perspective and say, okay, has that rate methodology, which you spent a great deal of money with consultants to come up with, has it worked or has it? I went through your previous staff reports on these issues, and what you will find if you go back on those staff reports is your staff has repeatedly, and I would say correctly, informed you that the rates in Stanislaus County are lower than the rates in the adjoining communities. So to the extent you want to have some sort of objective standard to say, are our rates good, bad, in the middle, high, or what, perhaps the best comparison is how are you doing in relationship to the other communities, and certainly those city councils have an increased interest, just as much as yours, of seeing that those rates are competitive, and you can see in the open marketplace that your rates are indeed lower than they are in the adjoining communities. That suggests that the rate methodology, which you paid a lot of money to establish, is indeed working, and as I understand it, it's the one that will go into the RFP. So what I'd recommend is that instead of going out to RFP, because keeping in mind, you are doing an RFP on the one contract for which there is not an evergreen, and this does absolutely nothing to the evergreens. Instead, you are simply taking the one person who voluntarily gave up that contractual right, and they are the ones that are now subject to the RFP, which there may be a bigger picture, but from the limited picture of my client, seems eminently unfair. We would recommend this as an alternative. Number one, inasmuch as we have experience with modern contracts, you give us an opportunity during a certain set time of the 11 months to try to negotiate an agreement with your staff that would achieve all that you're trying to accomplish, as pointed out by the PowerPoint, and have a date certain, and that the staff and my client must report back to you at that time. And either we have reached agreement, in which case you need to review that agreement and see is it sensible and reasonable to you, and you can either reject it or accept it at that point. Or if we've not reached, and if you don't reach agreement, then you automatically go into the RFP. Or in the alternative, we cannot reach agreement and we report that to you and then the RFP immediately goes into effect. But what's the harm of trying to come up with that modern contract between your staff and my client, and if it works, you have it as a template to use to the other cases? And I'd go a step further and say that you should file your notices with those other three groups saying to cut off the evergreen and have this contract terminate at the same time as those other contracts terminate, and then simply do an RFP on areas 1, 2, 3, and 4 all at once. if you're really looking at free enterprise to see how can we drive the rates down the lowest, I can't think of a better situation than if all four regions were up all at once and really create about as honest a competition as you possibly can amongst all four of the haulers at the same time in all of the areas, all of which could be accomplished in this alternative, without in any way, shape, or form taking away your flexibility to impose an RFP in this instance in the event that we are unable to come to agreement within a period of time, still allowing enough time for the RFP on Area 3. And finally, with respect to the consultant, you know, largely the work has been done. I do not know why you need to spend the additional time with that consultant. It seems to be just an unnecessary expense. We already know what needs to be in the contract. You've already set forth the methodology in the rates. What you really need to do is process it, and it seems like this consultant is not necessary. And indeed, one cannot help but almost chuckle at the rich irony that that service is not being hired based upon competitive bidding, but is being done in an uncompetitive situation. And I would argue what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And if you ask me how do I know the rates are good for garbage, I would say look at the other communities. I don't know what the other communities did when they hired their garbage consultants. And it would seem to me that if you're going to keep a consistent position, then you ought to go out to an RFP for that particular service as well. So in short, we are not disagreeable with what you're wanting to do. We want to be part of the solution, if you will let us. And that is what we're asking today. A reasonable opportunity to return to you with a template that can be used in all the areas without having to hire a bunch of consultants. Or if it's been done before, we're not reinventing anything new. It's the same wheel that people have built elsewhere. And then at that point, you decide if you like it or not. If you don't like it, we flip in the RFP. If we can't come into agreement, we flip in the RFP. But if it does work, you then have a model for your template with a company that's used to agreeing to these sort of terms. The contract ends with the other three contracts, and then you have open bidding for all four of those areas at once, which will certainly determine as best it can what those rates should be. So I thank you for the opportunity of listening to us today. Again, we really want to be part of the solution. We want you to help you with this. We want to be a positive force for this. We're not interested in being difficult or an obstacle. I think our service has been good in that area. We've heard no complaints at all, and we'd like to continue to be able to serve that area. Thank you.
Mr. Robinson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I would just make a couple comments. First, I do agree with Mr. Harum that competition is positive and it is good for our community and it's good for the ratepayers. The recommendation before you supports competition does provide the current operator an equal opportunity and perhaps an enhanced opportunity as compared with other operators because this one understands the route and understands the region to be served. The concept of expecting the operator to provide to the county the contract from which a final agreement will be drafted feels a little bit like opening the door and asking the fox to enter the hen house. And so I have a little concern with that as well. I do agree with Mr. Harum's comment that the Evergreen contracts are something that we need to pursue, that we need to address, and those need to be brought into state-of-the-art agreements. This is a good first step. It gives us, as a public agency, an opportunity to do our due diligence, to learn from an initial offering, and to develop the best contracts we can for the people that will be paying for those services, the ratepayers in our communities.
Are there any further comments from the public on this matter? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board for action. Supervisor O'Brien.
Just a wrap up of the fact that I do support taking this out to bid. I've always supported that. And then second, just to follow up on a consultant, it's been my position all along that you know, we use consultants all the time in government, and sometimes I personally don't think they're necessary, and this is one case I do not think so.
Did you do think it is or do not?
Not yet.
Do not. Supervisor Grover.
I know when we started the process, we were talking about more than $100,000 and to do something similar, and staff heard us the first go-round, did 70 to 80% of the work in-house along with county council, and I think just bringing it to a final closure with someone that specializes in this, in this case, is appropriate. I'd like to move approval of staff recommendations 1 through 3.
Okay. Motion's made by Supervisor Grover. Your second.
Seconded.
Seconded by Supervisor Monteith. Any further comments? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are those opposed?
No.
Motion passes 3-1.
Thank you.
Thank you. Scheduled matters, we have none tonight. Today. Correspondence?
This board has received, excuse me, this board has received Form 10-Q from Avanta Energy Corporation for the third quarter ended September 30, 2008, regarding the Stanislaus Waste Energy Financing Agency and the Covanta Stanislaus, Inc.
Refer to the Department of Environmental Resources.
This board has received a letter from the Federal Emergency Management Agency regarding information on projects within Stanislaus County that are located within an identified special flood hazards area.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development, the Department of Public Works, and the Chief Executive Office, Office of Emergency Services.
This board has received a letter from the Stanislaus County Superintendent of Schools regarding the 2008 William Venezuela report for Stanislaus County Schools.
Acknowledge receipt of report.
This board has received a letter from the City of Modesto and the City of Ceres regarding animal control services in Stanislaus County.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received a claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisors reports? Supervisor Grover.
I'd like to just to report so that the full board is aware. Mayor Ridenour and I were requested to meet with the United Way board yesterday. Not real clear going over there what we were there to talk about, but they had included an invitation to all of their service providers, which about 10 or 12 agency heads also showed up. And what their question was how can we be more involved with the government, the governments, and determining how money is spent, services are provided in the cities and counties. And we spent a lot of time talking about the fact that not only do we not see extra money now that would support what they're wanting to do, we see less of it in the next 2 to 3 years. I think the good thing that came out of it was the possibility for them to look at the services that we're providing. And if they see areas where they could do a higher level of service or across a broader spectrum than what we're providing, that we want to hear about it. We want to hear what their ideas are. So I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't entertaining that thought myself, but that you all would be included in thinking about that and seeing it and maybe helping to evaluate as it goes on. I think one of the organizations there indicated that, I think they were a food bank, they are 30% below normal on their donations and 30% above normal on their requests. And I think that's pretty similar across the board.
Yeah. Further board reports? I just had to make one comment. I went along with the sheriff's ride-along this Saturday night. I usually go about twice a year. But this was the first time I was ever with the canine unit. And that really was a very professional unit. That I could sure see the importance of having the dogs out on patrol. Yet I saw some very professional police work that night. And they did apprehend somebody who was out on parole and had stolen a car. I compliment the sheriff's department on their fine work that they did that night, as they probably do every night. Legislative and fiscal Management report. Bill Robinson?
Yes, real quickly, I did want to let you know that the governor's special session is ongoing at this time. The estimated deficit through the 2009-2010 fiscal year for the state has grown to about $28 billion.
$28 billion,
over the next 19 months. There are several issues that are making a negotiation between Republicans and Democrats in the legislature difficult, the most significant being the Republicans holding a tight line on raising taxes and fees. The governor's proposal includes some very significant increases in revenue, 1.5 cents in sales tax over a three-year period, 9.9% oil severance tax, expansion of sales tax to about six different services, and what's termed a nickel a drink alcohol beverage tax increase. The legislature only has another week or so to act before the new legislature is sworn into office and begins to work. They will be working for the balance of this week, which I assume is today and tomorrow. We do not anticipate a deal, although you never know as things get worse. The 2008-2009 fiscal year deficit in state legislature is now expected to be about $11.2 billion for the remaining 7 months of this fiscal year. It's a very difficult time in the state legislature. Many, if not most, of the proposals on the table will have an adverse effect on local government and schools' ability to deliver services to their critical customers, and we will keep tracking this and let you know as we see any changes or movement.
Did you mention the increase in the car tax? You're reading off those taxes. I didn't hear that one.
I didn't mention that there is on the table a proposal to as much as triple the car tax, and I did not mention that.
Just to refresh everybody's memory, the car tax was a property tax on vehicles that used to go to local government. The state took all that money for itself, and in return exchanged the increase in property taxes to the local jurisdictions. As you know, those taxes have went down quite a bit because of the lower property value. And now the state wishes to triple the money that goes to them. Just wanted to remind everybody the history of that. Okay, we will adjourn to closed session. Mr. Doring?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We have two matters to discuss with the conference with legal counsel. First is anticipated litigation to discuss one case. This is pursuant to Government Code Section 54956, Subdivision C. Second is to discuss existing litigation. The matter is Clark and Sullivan Builders Incorporated versus County of Stanislaus. This is Stanislaus County Superior Court case number 612057, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision A. And we do not expect any report on either of these matters.
This meeting is adjourned.